Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Purva Vibhag, which is Eastern section. The first wave is called Samanya Bhakti. Continuing with the explanation of the verse 11, Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmad Yanavritam Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. If you leave this open, you'll get some draft there. Kitchen windows and this door. The window go across. You know. So this verse is explaining what is pure bhakti, and we have been explaining that for several days. And I thought I would give a summary definition, which is different than is mentioned in this book of Bhanuswami. And the same verse is mentioned in Srila Prabhupada's Nectar Devotion. Although it's in the content of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Prabhupada puts it in the introduction. So it gets a little confusing sometimes. Although it's part of the actual book, it's included in Prabhupada's introduction. Because this is the very basis of bhakti. You must have heard this verse over the years. Anya Bilashita Shunyam. So one definition is to render favorable service to Krishna with one's body, mind, and speech, being completely devoid of any other desire, and to have no covering of brahmagyan or karma. This is uttam bhakti. So what we've been discussing over the last few days is these different coverings. Yesterday we explained the avritam, or the covering of gyan. Gyan means knowledge. So knowledge, of course, is not a bad thing. If it's knowledge of Krishna, bhakti gyan, knowledge of devotional service, how to practice sadhana, knowledge of our identity and our relationship with Krishna, knowledge of Krishna's vibhutis, his opulence, and all of his different attributes, knowledge about nam tattva, knowledge of Krishna's name, his qualities, his pastimes. This is all helpful and very useful. But sometimes one may be covered by knowledge of, may even be attracted by knowledge of Brahman, or Advaita Gyan. It's called Brahma Gyan, or knowledge about the impersonal aspect. And this can be a covering of bhakti. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned that if someone hears Mayavadi philosophy, then it's bhakti nash. He says, Mayavadi shunile. Mayavadi bhashya shunile, sarva bhakti nash. If one hears the Mayavad philosophy, then all of his devotion can become annihilated, can become destroyed. Because one will think, well, actually, maybe Krishna is not a separate person, or maybe Krishna is a transformation of Brahman, or maybe Krishna is Brahman. This kind of covering will actually dilute our devotion or our feelings for the personality of Godhead. So jnana karmad yadavritam. So we discussed that yesterday. And we wanted to discuss a little bit about karma, the covering of karma. And Jiva Goswami, in his commentary, he very extensively explains how our bhakti can be covered by karma. This is a little easier to see, how bhakti is covered by karma. Even everyone's heard of these terms, karma, mishra, bhakti, how our devotion becomes mixed with karma or desire to enjoy. In fact, practically speaking, all of our endeavors are like this. There's so much filtering of enjoyment spirit. Maybe this chair can be cleared here so this devotee can sit on that chair. The men can come up a little closer, you know, like it's nice, you know. You're okay. These guys are just, I don't have enough walls in the room. The wall space is limited. And many backs are crying for walls. Everyone should do yoga. And then they have a built-in wall. If you do yoga, then you have a... You look like you must do yoga. You have the right form for yoga. If you do yoga, then you don't need a wall, because this is the backside, the back of your back is the wall. It's called the back wall, right? This is the firewall. The front wall where the belly is, or the fire, is called the firewall, which is a term in cars they call the firewall. It separates the engine from the passenger compartment. At any rate, this term of karma, This means the desire to enjoy. So we've heard this term, karma mishra bhakti, devotion mixed with karma or fruitive activities. But Jiva Goswami gives a very extensive explanation of this, which in one sense doesn't apply so much to the modern times, because Varnashram Dharma is practically extinct in this present-day India, and it didn't even exist outside of India. But he spends many pages explaining an example of that, but I don't want to go into that too much, but I've taken some summary notes. He says that karma, what Rupa Goswami is hinting at when he says this covering, the karma can become a covering, he refers to daily, which means nitya, and periodic or occasional, naimittic, duties which are mentioned in the smritis, which for us really doesn't mean anything, and not the daily and seasonal actions of serving the Lord. Smarta rituals and the duties prescribed within Varnashram Dharma are forbidden, but acts of devotional service helpful to Krishna Bhajan are not forbidden. So this is just summarizing Jiva Goswami's commentary, because Rupa Goswami was living in a society 500 years ago, and he wanted to really clarify what is pure bhakti. For example, if someone in the Varnashram days, we can only hear about it, doesn't really apply to most of us, someone would become a Gaudiya Vaishnava and pursue the path of pure bhakti, uttam bhakti, but he would be still attached to his rituals, his daily rituals, it's called nitya karma or nitya kriya, his daily actions. For example, he would do so many rituals before chanting Gayatri, which I mentioned the other day. He would take a snan and he would establish his asan stapana. He would establish his asan with different mudras. Then he would do nyas, then pranayama, and face in a particular direction, and do all kinds of rituals and that are enjoined in the Vedas before chanting his Gayatri. It might take half hour, 45 minutes to do these rituals. And those rituals themselves are not uttam bhakti. Those rituals are not pleasing to Krishna. These are rituals which purify, it's called dravya dosh or desh dosh. There's faults and difficulties in objects or in places which have to be purified if one is following the path of karmakanda. Because Brahmins and Kshatriyas, etc., they also do so many activities following the karmakanda, and everything has, all the objects have to be pure, the time has to be perfect, the direction has to be correct, because the Vedas are prescribing, if it's all done like this, then you get a particular result. So in Varnashram Dharma, people are chanting their anik, or their morning Gayatri, or noon Gayatri, or evening Gayatri, to attain something. They want something. So they want knowledge, or they want power, they want elevation, so many things. So if they don't observe very strictly, then they don't get the result. So they come into bhakti. Such a person comes into Gaudiya Vaishnavism and tries to follow uttam bhakti, but he's very attached to these rituals, and he's even fearful. He's afraid that if I don't do these, then I'll be punished or I'll get reaction. Because in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, it says it has all prescriptions for punya and pap, that if you do this sin, then you have to do this prayaschitta, or this activity to counteract it. And if you are in this particular varna, or this particular ashram, you're enjoined, or you're duty bound to perform or execute this particular activity as a Brahmin, as a Kshatriya. And if you don't do it, you get a reaction. And if you do it properly, then you get some blessings or benefit. So this is what Dharma means. Dharma means to act. Dharma means action. You act according to your position, and if you act correctly as guided by the Vedas, then you're rewarded. If you act incorrectly according to your position, then you're punished. So there's a lot of fear here, a lot of fear going on. So someone comes and they're afraid, oh, if I don't do it like this, I'll get reaction. Where, although my guru is saying, listen, you should finish your Gayatri in 10 minutes, because you have to cook Thakurji's offering. We say, well, Guruji, well, I am trained in such a way that it takes me 1.5 hours to do my Gayatri. You know, I have to do so many bathings and clay and rub myself 10 times of clay and 16 times of water and this and that. And so, and then the Guru says, forget about that. You know, that this is all ritual. This is ritualistic. This has nothing to do with pure bhakti, uttam bhakti. This is not pleasing to Krishna. And in this path, on our path, Uttam Bhakti, everything should be traced out for the anukulyena, the anukulya, the favorableness or the pleasure or happiness of Krishna. So these aren't necessary, because as soon as one is connected with Nam, then all purity is there. As soon as you're connected with Krishna, dravya dosh, desh dosh, kala dosh, the faults of wrong timing or place or objects and contamination all becomes immediately cleansed. Om apavitra pavitrova sarvavastam gato viva yak smarat pundrikaksham sabayavyantara shuchi. It says, if you remember Krishna, then whether you're apavitra, impure, or pure, whether you're sabayavyantara shuchi, whether you're abhyantara, or whether you're outside or you're inside, or wherever you are, and you're outside and inside, immediately become pavitram, become pure. Nothing else is required. So bhakti itself is completely pure. And we know that verse from Padma Purana. It says, Purna Shuddho Nitya Mukta Binatva Namanamano. Purna Shuddho, that Krishna's Nam, Rup, Guna, Leela, is all pure. So when you're chanting Krishna mantra, Kam Gayatri, this is all Nam Sankirtan. These Guru mantra, Gora mantra, it's all Nam Sankirtan, Brahma Gayatri. This is all. So when you're connected with Krishna's Nam, Rup, Guna, Leela, then everything's pure. Your mind is pure, your body is pure, the ground you're sitting on becomes pure. So there's no separate endeavor required. And all of these activities of bhakti are only performed for bhakti's sake. It's called Naishkam or Nishkam. There's no desire. The bhakti has no desire but the pleasure of Krishna. He doesn't want to get this fruit or that fruit or this gain or that gain. So he doesn't have to consider. But many people are very much attached to the path of karma in this regard. It doesn't just mean material enjoyment. That's obvious. We have to give up material enjoyment or material desires and simply act for the pleasure of Krishna. But generally what Rupa Goswami is hinting at here or directing here is karma in relation to our activities in Varnashram Dharma. Because Dharma means action. We say the Dharma of a Brahman, the Dharma of a Kshatriya, which Krishna mentions. Krishigo Rakshya Vanijam, Krishna says in Gita, this is the Dharma for a Vanya, or a Vanya or a Vaishya. Krishigo Rakshya Vanijam, Sukarma says, Karmana Sabhav. He said, this is the Sabhav, this is the very nature of someone who's a Vaishya. He engages in land, he works with land. He protects cows, he does banking, commerce. These are his activities. So this is his dharma. So this is the dharma for the Vaishya. And then that dharma means action. Because if we say cow protection, krishi go rakshya, it means the bull and the cow must be protected by those that have money. So those that have money can buy grains and provide goshalas and protect the cows and bulls. So that dharma for the Vaishya means that he has to act. So dharma means action. Action guided by the Vedas, that is your particular dharma. So he's saying that it's okay to engage in. So now someone might say, well, karma, the word karma, he's saying that bhakti can be covered by karma. So therefore, any kind of action we do in this world may also be considered karma. So we can't do anything but sit in the corner and chant Hare Krishna. We can't have families, we can't work, we can't do anything. And then he's explaining, it's okay to engage in ordinary social and religious activities, but such activities should not become more prominent than our activities of direct bhakti, or the direct devotion of hearing and chanting. Otherwise, they can cover our devotional attitude and disqualify us from pure devotional service. So this is what is mentioned in Upadeshamrita about over-endeavor. Because our primary activity of life is to attain Krishna Prem. We have families, we have jobs, we have various pursuits, but that should not be prominent in our life. That should be the just small portion of our life, or small portion of our, if, even if it occupies a large portion of our time, it should not occupy a large portion of our mind and our meditation. We may spend 12 hours a day in the workplace earning money for our family, or just say our family, even if it's not, you have some working for some spiritual project or something. But why that 12 hours is going on, our mind should not be 12 hours absorbed just in the business. We may be there sitting in some shop for 12 hours because we may be a shopkeeper. They work like that from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. But while, if you see in Vrindavan, it's very interesting when you live in Vrindavan, you see how many of the shopkeepers pass their time. They spend their 12 hours in the shop. And they're just waiting for some fish to bite their hooks, you know, buy their product. But how are they passing their time? They're reading Radha Sahasranam, Gopal Sahasranam, Vishnu Sahasranam. They're chanting mala, they're doing puja, they're reading shastra, they're reading Garga Samhita and Bhagavat Puran, Skanda Puran. They're absorbed. So they're devotees of Krishna, they're bhaktas. But they're family men, they have three or four children, they have a house. So a large portion of their life, 8 hours is spent sleeping, 12 hours in the shop, that's 20 hours. And now there's 4 hours left. So in that 4 hours, there's bathing, there's eating, and then there's intercourse with the wife and children, managing the household affairs, banking. And in that 4 hours, they manage to visit their favorite temple, Bunki Bihari, Radha Damodar, etc., do Prikama of Radha Damodar, and then go off to work. So actually, practically the whole day is absorbed in bhakti, although they're 12 hours sitting in the shop. And if you look at them just coming from the West and you walk in and he's haggling over 10 rupees for the dhoti, you think, oh, this guy is just attached to money. And you don't actually observe the person's full life cycle or full life circle. You'll think he's just some greedy shop owner. He's fighting over 10 rupees. But actually you don't realize that he's been reading the Bhagavatam for 6 hours. And you're the first one that walked in his shop. So he wants to make sure he makes that 10 rupees extra profit on his dhoti because, you know, he has to bring some money home to buy the vegetables. And you're thinking, why is he so uptight about it? But you weren't there the 6 hours before you walked in the shop. Nobody came in the shop that day. So from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. he was reading the Bhagavatam. And you think he's some gross Agarwal or some gross materialist. And even you may throw a few curse words at him or something. You this or that. It's not very intelligent because he's a Brijbasi devotee of Krishna. And you just say, oh, you this, that. So, because we lived some years, 3 years at Radha Damodar, and we got to see the bhakti side of the Agarwals. Not the business side, the bhakti side. Like someone, for example, you may be working in some computer firm and they know you come to work with suit and tie and you're very expert and efficient in your work and you look like an ordinary computer person. Then on Sunday afternoon, the guy sees you in the park. In Paris, and you're sitting in front of a harmonium. You have tilak and a quarta, and you know, and you're chanting Hare Krishna. The guy looks, wait a minute, isn't this the guy I work with? And he says, excuse me, do you work for IBM? And he says, no, that must be my brother. So, you know, you don't know what a person's all about until you live with them for 24 hours and week by week. So Jiva Goswami is explaining to, yes, it's okay to engage in ordinary social dealings or even in different religious functions, but that should not predominate or be prominent in our life. And then what he means by religious functions is this, because we say, well, wait a minute, everything we're doing is religious, so this is karma, but what he's referring to is it's okay to engage in ordinary religious functions. He's referring to the Vedic samskaras. Because someone might say that, well, this is a covering of karma, because this is karmic activity. Nam karana, jata karma, vivaha jagya, shrad ceremony, all these dasavita samskaras. There's 10 different purificatory rites which are enunciated in the Vedas. And this is all part of Karmakanda. For purifying the consciousness of people in a particular varna ashram, they're supposed to do these rites, cutting the umbilical cord, and then cut the hair cutting ceremony, the anaprashna samskara, the giving of first grains, and then the writing with the chalk, vidya samskara, it's when a child is taught how to write the first letter of the Sanskrit alphabet. The teacher takes a chalk and he writes, ah, right? Ah, because ah is the basis of all language, the sound ah. So that's a sanskara, and then the shrad ceremony or pind or the ceremony after your ancestors, your relatives die, then you're offering during Ashwin Maina and Krishna Paksha. For 2 weeks you offer them food and some sacrifices are there. So someone might think, oh, I'm a devotee now, I don't need to do any more of these samskaras or any more of these karmic rituals. I will abandon these things. But Jiva Goswami is saying, no, these can be continued because they are called naimittic dharmic activities. Although they're not actually uttam bhakti, but they are not pratikul. They are not against uttam bhakti because it's only once a year. For a few days you offer some food to your ancestors. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who rejected Varnashram Dharma in Madhya Lila, Ramananda Roy teachings, chapter 8, when he's asking Ramananda Roy, Mahaprabhu is asking, please explain what is the perfection of life. And then Ramananda Roy says, Varnashram Dharma. This is, one should follow his Varna as ashram. This is the perfection of life, which is what all the Vedas are about. And then Lord Chaitanya said, no, this is external. This is external. Go higher. So Lord Chaitanya himself is rejecting the Varnashram system. And he says, go higher. Then Ramananda Roy goes, he mentions karma sannyas, and then Lord Chaitanya says, go higher. Then he says, well, you said yourself, 4,500 years ago, you said in Kurukshetra, sarva dharman prityaja mame kam sharanam braja, abandon all dharmas, all varnas and all dharmas, and just surrender to Krishna, surrender to me. That's what you said. So I propose that this is the perfection of life. And Lord Chaitanya heard that and said, what? Sarva dharma prityaja? This is external. Forget this. Go higher. You must have read in Madhya Lila, chapter 8, Ramananda Roy's teachings, or Sambhad, it's called. So, because this is external, because this is still doesn't bring us to Braj Bhakti. Even just abandoning all dharmas, you may give up all dharmas and still have desire for Salokya or Samipya or some type of liberation, which is still part of the Varnashram system. Dharma, art, kam, moksha. So in this way, so Lord Chaitanya himself, although he rejects the Varnashram system, what did he do when his father died? He went to Gaya to do Pinda, to do Shraddh. He himself, who's rejecting Varnashram Dharma, he performed the Shraddh ceremony. Shraddh means the yagyas and pujas for your deceased ancestors. So he went to Gaya. Of course, he had other purposes to fulfill there because he met Ishwarapuri in Gaya. But nevertheless, he did observe that Varnashram Dharma function. So Jiva Goswami is saying these type of naimittic or occasional karmic functions, which include ordinary social dealings or these religious rituals or samskaras, they can be done. But they should not be prominent. For example, if someone is raised as a Brahmin, he may be raised in the tradition of offering a daily homa. Because in Grihastha life, it says that there's Panch Mahayagya, that there's five yagyas that must be done every day by Grihasthas. And one of those yagyas, because this counteracts the Panchamahapapam, the five types of great sins that all people engage in. It's called unconsciously. And one sin is we kill living entities when we walk on the ground. We kill so many ants. That's a sin. Another sin is when we cook with fire. There's so many insects living in the wood. Of course, now we cook with gas. But at least in Vrindavan, the gas is mixed half with water. When you buy these gas bottles, there's water inside. So there's so many living entities in the water, in the gas bottle. So when we cook with wood, we kill so many living entities. When we wash with water, we kill so many living entities. When we grind spices. In this way, unknowingly, so many living entities. It's called Jiva Hinsa. So much violence is done. So to counteract this, to do Prayaschitta, we have to do the Pancha Mahayagya. And one of those sacrifices is to serve guests, to invite guests into your home and serve them. I think everyone knows in the life story of Srila Prabhupada, his father, Gaur Mohan Day, he was entertaining and feeding every day four people a day. minimum. And he was not a very wealthy man. He was a cloth merchant. Srila Prabhupada's father was selling some saris or something and had a small shop. But he was inviting sadhus, holy men, into his house and feeding them. And then he would ask them, please, you bless my son, Abhay Day. You please bless my son that he becomes a pure devotee of Radharani. I think you must have read this if you read Lilamrita. Of course, actually, Prabhupada was blessing them that they become a pure devotee of Radharani by engaging them in that service. But the point is that his father is a grihastha and he was observing this. But one of the other yagyas that grihasthas are required to do, besides serve guests and give in charity, is to do a daily homa. Every day do a fire sacrifice. Now this person who was raised in this varnashram culture as a grihastha, he may become a Gaudiya Vaishnava. So this karma, this dharma he's been doing, dharma means action, so action means karma. So this word karma in this verse, jnana karma dhyanamritam, refers to the covering to be attached to those actions, those karmas, or those actions which are prescribed as your dharma according to the particular position you are in the varnashram system. Like a Brahmin has his Brahmin Dharma. Brahmin Dharma means the actions he has to perform. So he comes into Gaudiya Vaishnavas and he says, I have to do my daily fire yajna. I have to do my daily fire, my home. It's my father did it, my grandfather did it, I have to do it. And I'm afraid that if I don't do it, I'll get some reaction. So this is a covering of bhakti, because he's thinking that this karma is more important than bhakti. He's thinking that he's afraid that if I don't do this, then I'll be offending the Vedas, because this is a prescription in the Vedas for a Brahmin. And this is my tradition, and I've been doing it so long. So I must continue to do it. So this will actually dilute his bhakti. He will not be able to be facing Krishna directly, looking at Krishna face to face, because something will be coming between him and Krishna, and that's his attachment to Dharma, his attachment to his actions as a Brahmin. For example, doing the daily fire yajna. So then his bhakti will not become uttam. It's like, well, yes, Krishna, I want to worship you, but what about this? That's why he says, Masuchaha. Sarvadharman Prityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. He said, don't be afraid. There's nothing to fear. If you surrender unto me, there's nothing to be afraid of. Like sometimes people become devotees, but they've been worshipping. There's some water there. If you're thirsty, you can have some water. All right. Okay. It's a little stuffy. In the afternoon, class is outside. It's stuffy in here. So, what was I saying exactly?
You're talking about
Sarvadharma Masacha. Yeah. Then, what point I was making? Can't remember just now.
Coverings of karma.
I was just saying that I just had this analogy I wanted to use, I just slipped my mind. At any rate, so this karma, these actions of, if someone is raised in a particular way, then they become attached. They become attached to doing this, even when they come to bhakti. So, what I meant to say is that someone, it's very prevalent in India, someone is raised as a Shiva Bhakta. And they're in India, in the West, we don't have so much of that. But And they're always doing Shiva Puja. Then they come, they get initiated in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And then if you go to visit their house, they have an altar with maybe picture of Radha and Krishna or some deities. Then they have a little Shiva Linga there. They have their Shiva Linga there, or they have, and then they say, what is, because it depends on their consciousness and how they're seeing Lord Shiva, whether it's anukul for bhakti or not. Because Shiva's worship of Shiva can be very much anukul for Braj Bhakti. But if they have the right approach or attitude or understanding, proper synthesis, so most of the time they don't. And when you go to their houses, you say, so I see you have Lord Shiva here. Well, Maharaj, I'm initiated, I'm a Brahmin, but my father was a Shiva Bhakta, and my name was Shiv Prasad Gupta. And my father prayed to Shiva that he would have a son, so my name is Shiv Prasad. Of course, now I'm initiated, my name is Chaitanya Das. but I'm more attached to Shri Prasad. And I feel a grateful and indebted, and I just think that if I don't keep worshiping Shiva every day, then you know something's going to happen to me, because it's only by His grace that I even exist, because He fulfilled my father's prayers. And so I'm really afraid. So this is a covering. In other words, you're trying to love Krishna, you know, and embrace Krishna and Shiva at the same time, because you haven't realized that Shiva is in Krishna. That Shiva, Krishna includes everyone. If you worship Krishna, then everyone's satisfied. Very, very pleased. Shiva will be very, very pleased. So this is generally the outlook. So this is this karmic attachment to demigods or religious rituals can be actually a covering. But if we perform the Vedic smarta rituals, sacrifices, and yajnas to attain material enjoyment, this must be abandoned. This is another thing that happens amongst devotees. Many devotees are doing bhakti, but then they also call in Brahmins. They call in Brahmins to do different pujas and yajnas for material enjoyment. It's common, especially with rich bhaktas, rich devotees. This is a little bit off the topic for Western people, Western devotees, but it's very applicable to Indian devotees who will hear this class later. That they come to bhakti, they take initiation, they take Brahman Diksha and Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and they're aspiring for pure devotion, pure devotional service, Krishna Prem. But still they're attached to material enjoyment. So this attachment to material enjoyment is a covering of karma. So then they call in different Vedic Brahmins, oh please do a Shanti Homa, or please do a big puja for me so my factory takes off and I become a Kropati. So these are all coverings of karma, not depending on Krishna. I'm Krishna's devotee. Krishna, if you make me a Kropati, that's your will, then I'll use all the money for your service. If you take everything away, that's your will. Anyway, I'll keep doing your service. Whether I'm a Kropati or I'm a beggar, I'm going to keep serving you. Whatever you give me, I accept happily and joyfully for your service, and offer back to you for your service. But oftentimes there's two paths being cultivated by Indian devotees. The path of bhakti and the path of bhog. So this is what Rupa Goswami is addressing here. We have to put our both feet on one path and we can make good progress. If you go down to the riverside and the boatmen are there and they're clamoring for your business, come in my boat, come in my boat, come in my boat. And one person says 1 rupee. The other person says, no, 1/2 rupee. And you say, oh, maybe I go. And then the other person says, no. So you put 1 foot in one boat and 1 foot in the other boat. And then what happens? The boats go like this and you're in the water. You're all wet. So if we want to do bhakti, then we want to uttam bhakti. Because uttam bhakti, as sadhakas, if we're trying our best to practice uttam bhakti and to follow the teachings of uttam bhakti, then that uttam bhakti will condense and bring us to uttam bhakti and the level of bhava bhakti. Because uttam bhakti is throughout. But the basic superstructure of uttam bhakti, the superstructure of uttam bhakti must be clearly understood, even as a sadhaka or as a beginner. And we should endeavor to fulfill the requirements of uttam bhakti. Although we may have so much contamination, or we may have some residual karma, or we may be suffering so many different ways, but we're trying our best to uphold the definition of uttam bhakti and serve Krishna without any separate interest. So when we get the knowledge of what is uttam bhakti, oh, it's like this, and I should just depend on Krishna. And I see that, oh, my attachment to doing demigod worship, or my attachment to doing yajnas and homas for my material enjoyment, this will prevent me. This is pratikul, or this is against uttam bhakti. Then I should stop this. I should stop this. Otherwise, you're cheating. You're a hypocrite. You don't really want uttam bhakti. So this is why this definition is so inclusive. In other words, here's an example of an activity that could cover our devotional service. I heard this in one lecture. An example of an activity, a karmic activity, because we're discussing karma, which means different kinds of actions, religious karmakanda activities, homas, yajnas, attachment to naimittic, occasional, or nitya karmas of the Vedas, And here's another more practical one, which even the Western devotees can appreciate. An example of an activity or karma, a type of karma, which could cover our bhakti, karma avritam, avritam means the covering of our bhakti, is astrology. Have you ever heard of this science, astrology? Has anyone not heard of it? How many people have never visited an astrologer? Please raise your hand. What about this little girl, Lalita? Lalita is her name? Lalita. She probably doesn't even, she's in her own world. Maybe forget about it, just go back to your world. You haven't been? Well, you better step outside. you're the only pure devotee here. The rest of us are all contaminated by coverings of karma. You should go outside and hold class and teach us. So the devotee, because this karmic, this action of consulting an astrologer, the result of that may be that the devotee may put more faith in the power of destiny than in the power of bhakti. And this will impede his surrender to Krishna. This Prabhupada faced this many times with his disciples. And the most prominent example that we recall it's even written in a letter, so it's open for everyone to see. I believe it's a letter. If not a letter, which can be confirmed on folio, then it's the personal account of the individual. The disciple's name is Vishal Das. He's hard to miss. I mean, physically, he's quite a huge figure. And he's been in Vrindavan many times recently, and he lived here for many years in the early days. So he wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada, and he said, Prabhupada, I met with some astrologers, and they said that I have Rahu in my 10th house. And because Rahu is in my 10th house, then I'm not really able to make progress in bhakti towards the path of liberation. I don't have much hope in this life because of the influence of Rahu in my 10th house. I'm really having a hard time, and it's not really my fault, it's Rahu's fault. So then Prabhupada, he replied, he said, Krishna with his little toe, like his pinky toe or whatever you call your little toe, the little toe of his foot, Krishna, only with the little toe of his foot, he can kick 10,000 Rahus out of your house. Because he was saying, my 7th house is afflicted or retrograde or whatever they say, by the presence of Rahu, the influence of Rahu. So he said, with a little toe, he can kick 10,000 Rahus out of your house. This house, that house. So Prabhupada didn't place much significance on the astrological forecast for Vishal Das. He says, do bhakti and everything will become adjusted. If you ever meet, which is rare, really rare, but if you are very fortunate and you actually meet an honest astrologer, this is rare, very rare, because as Chanaka Pandit said, if someone doesn't control their senses, they cannot be trusted. So that means all of us. When the Sunday feast comes, then we're lost. So you can't trust me and I can't trust you. It says someone doesn't, at least Niti Shastra is telling like that. So that means no one in the world can trust anybody. Except maybe some pure devotees, you can trust them because they have some control in their senses because they surrender to Rishikesh. But if an astrologer was honest, by that rare exception, then he would look at your chart and he would say, Krishna Das, this chart that I've calculated here is describing your karmic record. This is your Prarabdha, which is laid out on this piece of paper. But I see by the markings on your forehead and these lines of tulsi around your neck that I assume that you've taken Vaishnava Diksha, in a bona fide sampradaya. Is that correct? Yes, that's correct. Well, therefore, this piece of paper that you and I are looking at and what I'm saying will not make much sense. Because if you have taken initiation in a bona fide Vaishnava Sampradaya and you're actually practicing bhakti, then your karma becomes changed and altered and edited by Krishna directly. Then whatever is going to happen to you is directly sent by Krishna himself. The good, the bad, and the ugly. There was a movie like that once called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So the good things, the papa karma, which is, gives you bad things, and the punya karma, which gives you good things, it's all in Krishna's hands. So that would be an honest astrologer. And if he was an honest pundit astrologer, then he would cite references from Bhakti Sandarva and so many other scriptures where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is telling and Jiva Goswami is telling and so many acharyas are telling that for the devotee there is no karma. Otherwise you're insulted because bhakti is Swarup Shakti. Swarup Shakti is Krishna. That means that karma and the permutations of the three modes of nature, which karma is played on the stage of the three modes of nature. That means the three modes of nature are more powerful than the Swarup Shakti of Krishna, which is incorrect. As Krishna affirms in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 14. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya daratiye mame veye prapandyante mayam etam tarantite. He says, Daivyesha gunamayi mame veye prapandyante. These gunas, if you surrender unto me, you can cross beyond them. Mayam tarantite. So how can Krishna on one side say that these three gunas, they're very difficult to cross? Mame vaye prapadyante. But if you surrender unto me, mayam etam tarantite, you cross over them and come to me. So Krishna is beyond the gunas. He's a controller of the whole. He's called Trigunadisha, Adishvara. He's a controller of the three gunas. So this would be the honest astrologer. But unfortunately, most devotees, they fall for astrology. It's like a trap. There's a trap on the bhakti marg. Marg means road or path. And sometimes animals, the hunter, they go in the forest and they set these traps. You know these traps? They have these, like, they look like a jaw or something. That they have a spring, that some spring, and they open up like this. And they have like sharp teeth on them. And then they have some spring and it's just lying like this and you put some leaves over it. And then if some spring or something release inside. And the animal doesn't see it. Like some deer or some bear or whatever, it depends on how big it is. And then the animal just steps on the leaves and when it hits that spring, it boom, it shuts and it grabs their leg. It grabs their leg, and sometimes that trap is tied to a chain and the chain is tied to a tree.
Booby trap,
well that's in warfare, but this is an animal trap, and then the animal is trapped there because it's tied to the tree, and he can't run. He just dies of starvation, or the hunter comes and shoots him. So these are traps on the path, the forest path. So this astrology is like a bear trap on the path of bhakti. And it's a valuable science when used in the correct circumstance. There's limited circumstances, but as far as bhakti goes, it's pratikul for bhakti, because it's not correct. And the biggest problem with astrology is that we don't even know what time we're born. If you're a chart that's 5 minutes off, then you have a different rising sign, different lagna. So then the calculations change. So the accuracy of birth time is questionable. So to put our faith in this karmic knowledge, this vidya, which is not paravidya, or put our faith in this karma or this destiny which is outlined here in our jyotish or janma kundali, this is a covering of bhakti. This will impede our devotion to Krishna. Oh, Krishna is all powerful. Krishna is the supreme controller. Krishna is the supreme controller. He's all powerful. He can do anything. But my chart says this. Then what happened to the supreme controller? It's just jargon. He says, yes, Krishna's a supreme controller. He's a Parameshwara and he can do everything. But, you know, Rahu's more powerful. And Ketu's more powerful. And Saturn's more powerful. You don't know in my chart, it's like going retrograde and upside down and inside out. Unless for the next 17 years I'm going to be an upside down flip-flop pancake. And so I'm just going to take a vacation for 17 years and I'll be back. I'll see you later. Have a good time. Keep my beads in the Brahmacharya Ashram. I'll pick them up in 17 years. I'm just going to take a ride with, you know, Saturn now and I'll be back. He's got a nice shiny car out front of the temple and he's got the back seats open. He says, hey, Savyasachin, hop in, let's go for a ride. So you hop in and you drive around. So this is a great aparad to Bhakti Devi. They say a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. So a little astrology is a dangerous thing. Little knowledge of, you say little, I have a phrase in English, I don't know other languages, but a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. A little knowledge, dot, 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 of astrology, or a little dabbling in astrology is a dangerous thing. Because firstly, it's not accurate. And secondly, it doesn't apply to a devotee. So then what is the basis of your using it for a map for your planning your or charting your destiny? But this is practical. This makes us think. Devotee may put more faith in the power of destiny than in the power of bhakti. That means another way of saying that is you put more faith in the power of karma, which means the three modes of nature, than more faith in the power of Bhagavan. Simple as that. And this will impede our surrender to Krishna. Karma, the word karma also refers to the covering of karma mishra bhakti and jnana mishra bhakti. So, of course, we were talking about karma, this is another point. The ultimate end of true knowledge is to understand that Krishna is everything. Vasudevam sarvamiti. And one should surrender unto him. This is the perfection of knowledge, bhakti gyan. No other knowledge is necessary. This is referring to gyan. So we can go on. I think we'll stop here and see if there's any questions, because I may have touched some tender nerves, especially if anyone is an astrologer in the audience. I call it Manjari. She caught my attention. Or whatever whoever you are. You're Manjari, that's for sure. So which particular one, that's your secret.
I want to go, if it's all right with you, because you've been speaking on the point of the point that Jiva Goswami made of the exceptional circumstances that a devotee can pray, please protect me.
Well, no, he doesn't. It's not that he can't. It just happens spontaneously.
Yeah, it happens spontaneously.
Like a reflex action.
Right.
It's not part of his nature. All of a sudden just came out.
Okay. So, I've been thinking about this, and I would like to understand it a bit more in terms of different circumstances that I see around. This is spontaneous. It's sudden circumstance. So, what about the sincere sadhaka who's praying to Krishna for protection? Protection from Maya, to protect his devotional priya.
I don't know if I should speak yet.
And there's also the devotees who choose not to earn money, but instead to undergo poverty, thinking, well, Krishna will provide. You know, I see both of these as engaging Krishna in their service. Thinking about this, and then there's the other side. It's the other side of Krishna's Karuna Shakti, his compassion Shakti, and Bhakti Vatsalya, that he likes to help his devotees. I would like to have a bit more of a balance and a fuller understanding of this.
Well, I think there's two parts to what you're saying, maybe more. One part is that we see in the prayers of the Acharyas, prominently that we know about, is Bhakti Vinod Thakur's prayers, And even Narottam Das Thakur, whose our calendar says it's his Tirubhav today. Narottam Das Thakur Mahashaya is Tirubhav. And in their songs and bhajans and prayers, they often, and there's different categories, the bhajans are divided into different categories, and one category or type of singing or praying is called Prarthana. Another is called Sharanagati and Lalasamayi and Vigyapti. There are different categories of prayer. So one category is called Sharanagati, which means surrender and taking shelter. So in this category of bhajans, if someone was to read those bhajans, there's 55 or 60 bhajans of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he's surrendering to the Lord and he's praying and revealing his utter helplessness, being tossed about in this material world and suffering due to the influence and modes of nature. So there in those prayers he's saying, please protect me, or O Gopinath, I'm a wicked materialist, I am addicted to all kinds of material enjoyment, please save me, please uplift me. So those prayers are there by our Mahajan Acharyas in Gaudiya Sampradaya. So certainly to pray like that, to admit, because this is a limb of Sharanagati, which is the basis of bhakti, Sharanagati, to Anukalyena Krishna, so what is that? Anukalyena Sankalpa Partikulya Savarjanam Rakshishya Titi Vishvaso Govtritve Varanam Tata Karapanya Nikshepa. In the sixth symptom of surrender, one is Rakshishya Titi Vishvaso, to have complete faith, Vishvas, or belief, that Krishna is my Raksha, he's my protector. So we have that faith, and we believe that, and we also pray that way. Krishna, please protect my bhakti. Or as Prabhupada would say, sometimes they would ask him, Prabhupada, how do you feel? And Prabhupada would say on some occasions, I'm always praying to Krishna that I don't fall down. I'm always praying to Krishna that I don't fall into Maya. And Prabhupada sometimes would say, the trouble with you Western boys and girls is you're not afraid of Maya. Because in the West, everything is co-ed. Co-educational, boys and girls together, and they're always mixed up so together. But each is Maya for the other. So we're so familiar with each other that we don't take it very seriously, the threat or the danger of mingling or associating with the opposite gender. So Prabhupada said, the trouble with the Western boys and girls is that they're not afraid of Maya. Maya is my friend, you know. Hey, sister, hey, brother. Hey, Bainji. Hey, Bai. So this prayer of a devotee to feel that I'm stuck in this material world, in this ocean of birth and death, and to pray for deliverance and to pray for protection, this is acceptable in the course of, it comes under the category of Uttam Bhakti, because this, in fact, this is a limb of bhakti. This is a limb of Uttam Bhakti. It's called Vandanam, Prarthana, offering prayers. And the model prayers are given by the Acharyas, although we can formulate our own prayers in our own language, our own words. But the mood of those prayers and the siddhanta, or the content of the prayers, should be inspired by the prayers of the Acharyas. Because we're only asking, the mood is that we're asking for protection so we can serve you and please you, not protection so I'm happy or I'm peaceful. We only want protection. Just like the Brijvasis, they're also praying. Whenever there's some difficulty, they're praying, Krishna, please protect us. So the Acharyas even comment in the purports, oh, is this Sakama? Is this Sakama Bhakti? That the Brijvasis are praying for something for themselves or their own protection? Why do they want to be protected? They want to be protected because they know that their bodies belong to Krishna and they have to render valuable service for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna, please protect us so you can utilize us for your pleasure. So the attitude or the mood is quite different than someone saying, oh, I don't want to die, please protect me. It's quite different. Just like sometimes there's a discussion, who is a greater devotee, the father of Ram or the father of Krishna? As you mentioned about Vatsalya, both are in Vatsalya Ras. Dasarath is in Vatsalya Ras. He's the father of Ram. And Nanda Baba is the father of Krishna. Both are in Vatsalya Ras. So who's a greater devotee? So the Rambhaktas will say, oh, Dasarath is a much greater devotee. Because when Ram was banished to the forest, he could not bear the separation from his beloved son Ram. So he died in separation. Even I think on a day, it wasn't in the Ramayana, as soon as he heard that his son, he just fainted right there and he died on the spot. So just see the intensity of his love, see the intensity of his attachment that he had for his son. The Dasarath couldn't live for a moment. As soon as he heard that he would be separated from his son, he said, oh, how can I live? There's no meaning to my life without my son. Better I give up this useless body than drag on in this world without my son. So he gave up his body. So many people, they think, oh, just see how great a bhakta Dasarath is. Now, when you study the Gaudiya Vedanta, or Gaudiya Vedanta, and hear from our acharyas, you don't find any mention in any book of the Goswamis or any Gaudiya Acharya glorifying King Dasarath. Why is that? Because they say, Now Krishna is the father, Nanda Maharaj is the father of Krishna. Krishna left this Vrindavan on a Kura's chariot when he was 10 years old and 9 months or whatever it was. He was short of 11 years. He was about 11 years old, 10 and a half years old. Akura took Krishna and Balaram to Mathura, and Krishna never came back again. I mean, technically, although there's some Acharya's comments that he did come back. Basically, he didn't come back again. But Nanda Maharaj continued to live. So he must be very selfish. You know, he's living. I mean, wow, he's not attached to Krishna like Dasarath was attached to his son Ram. Because if he was attached like Dasarath, then he would have given his life up. How could he live without his son Krishna, right? So Nanda Maharaj must not be as advanced, must not have as much love as Dasarath. Dasarath is a much bigger devotee, is much more vatsalya and a loving parental affection for his son than Nanda Baba. Nanda Baba is just living because he's afraid to give up his body. He's attached to his body. He wants to live in Braj and eat makkhan and misri and burfi and just drag on his life. He doesn't even care that his son left. Just see, he has no love for his son. Is that right? So they explain that Nanda Maharaj is light years and light years greater devotee. Of course, they're all transcendental personalities. They're all eternal associates of the Lord. And they're all expansions of the Lord's direct body. That should be understood. But in terms of rasa vichar or tattva vichar, to understand the transcendental truth of rasa or spiritual reality, Nanda Maharaj is a much more intimate devotee of Bhagavan than Dasarath. Because Dasarath, his example is he's very attached to his son and he can't live without his son, so then he dies. He gives up his body. So then it's finished. His attachment to his son is finished. His suffering is finished. Everything's finished. You just die once. It's painful. It's very painful to give up your body. You die, you're finished. But Nanda Maharaj was dying every day in separation. He was dying every moment. Because he was thinking, oh, I can't live without my son. So Nanda Maharaj gave up eating, he gave up sleeping, he gave up everything. It was just simply suffering moment to moment in separation from his son. He was suffering so much you can't even calculate. Can you imagine going, and he didn't see him for, when he left when he was 11, and then when Krishna came to Kurukshetra in the solar eclipse, Krishna was about 50. So, and of course in the battle of Kurukshetra, which was later, he was about 90 or 96 or something. That was later. But at the solar eclipse in Kurukshetra, Krishna came from Dwarka. He was about 50 years old. So now, 10 years old he left. So then he met Nanda Maharaj. So that was 40 or 50 years. So for 40 or 50 years, Nanda Maharaj, he was dying every day. Every moment he was dying a painful death of separation. But why did he continue to live? Because he didn't have a particle of selfishness. He was just thinking, Krishna, when he boarded the chariot, and he went with Akura. We said, Akura, when will they come back? Oh, the boys will be back in a couple of days. He said something, some Brijbasi phrase or something, Padaro, something like Parsu, but it's like day after tomorrow. They'll be back in a couple of days. So Nanda Maharaj was thinking, I can't bear to live. I've lost all my zest for life. I don't want to drink. When I touch water to my lips, it feels like poison. And just when I smell the fragrance of food, I want to faint. And how can I eat anything until I fed it to my son? How can I even open my eyes to the sun unless I smell to the sun planet and this rising sun unless I first go into my bedroom of my son and smell his head? How can I rest at night unless I embrace my son and when he comes back from the cowherding pastures, unless I embrace him and touch his body? How can I lie down in bed at night? So I can't sleep. I can't open my eyes to the sun. I can't drink water. I can't eat a bite of food. But at the same time, I can't live and I can't die. I can't do anything to maintain my life. But I certainly can't give up my life, although it's more painful than the fires of Kalahuta poison. It's more painful than drinking that. But I'm only living because my son, he may come back. Because he said he would come back in a couple of days. If I give up my body and he comes back and he has no father, how much unhappiness he'll feel. How much he'll cry. Oh, where's Nanda Baba? Oh, my son, the day you left for Mathura, and after when you didn't come back for 2 days, he couldn't bear to live in a fire of separation, the pain of separation, he gave up his body. Then Krishna would cry and cry, he would cry for the rest of his life. My father, Baba. So Ram also came back to Ayodhya after 14 years. And then, where's my father? So in a plea of, oh, I'm so attached to my son, I can't live without my son, but the whole idea of relationships or sambandha in the spiritual world is to give pleasure to Krishna, not to give pain. So when Ram came back and he had no father, did that give him pleasure? Did that make him happy? He became very sad. So that's not bhakti. That's not even considered to be bhakti. Because bhakti means that action. That's our very definition. Anyabhilashati shunyam. Then anukulyena. Krishna anushilanam. Then acting moment to moment with body, minds, and words. Anushilanam. Cultivating mental and emotional actions for the pleasure of Krishna with a favor that will be favorable to Krishna with a favorable attitude and a positive attitude. So therefore the acharyas say that you can't compare. It's like comparing a match to the sun planet. The Vatsalya Bhav of Dasarath versus the Vatsalya Bhav of Nanda. You understand the point? That he's thinking my son comes back and he has no father. Just imagine if you were the sun. And maybe nowadays it's different, but in those days people really loved their sons and fathers really loved their sons. It was tight bondage. So that was the first point. And then the second part, what was the second part again? Or was the second part of your... One was about praying for Krishna protect, and I would kind of answer that to some extent. Oh yeah, the idea of just depending on Krishna or work.
I undergo extreme poverty, and in thinking about Krishna will provide, and I have seen that Krishna is not happy to see his devotee undergoing that extreme poverty and suffering unnecessary. And
well, it's yeah. Yeah, there's a broad spectrum here in these personalities because it's all about motivation. It's all about what's moving that person in his heart. If I'm a young man, and I have ability, physical and intellectual ability to maintain and to work and to procure income. And then I can establish myself somewhat peacefully or save money. I can go to Russia and I can do some work in engineering and save some money. then I can come back to Vrindavan and do bhajan and absorb myself peacefully throughout the day and night in bhajan because I have sufficient money for food. This is called responsible devotion. I would call this responsible devotion, just to give it kind of a tag. And now someone else is a young man and says, anyway, Krishna will take care. This is called irresponsible devotion. Because the person is not actually ananya bhakta. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a very important qualifying word. He says, what is that verse? No, it's not that exactly. It's yobicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan. How's that verse? Anyway, there's this verse, says abhicharina, says that the devotee, one who actually has bhakti and devotion, he says, Krishna, I only want to absorb myself in your service. I just want to day and night chant your name. That person, Krishna will accept and will personally take care of. But many people, they misconstrue. They say, yes, they're lazy. They're basically lazy and they're cheaters. Because the cheating propensity is prevalent. We have four defects as conditioned souls. So they're not abhicharina bhakti. They don't have this undivided devotion for the Lord. So this idea of depending fully on the Lord is a byproduct of intense spiritual advancement. But a neophyte says, well, I'm just going to Vrindavan and depend on Krishna. But Krishna says, wait a minute, you cheater. Why you depend on me? You're not ananya bhakta. You're not abhicharina, because ananya is similar like that word, verse. You don't have, ananya means nothing other than bhakti. You have so many things on your agenda. You want to just live in like a hippie, a devotional hippie, and depend on me as your rich father to supply everything. On a plea of pretending, you're a pretender, you're a cheater. You're trying to pretend, oh, I'm a very advanced devotee, I'm just depending on Krishna. But when you're so-called depending on Krishna all day lounging around, you're sleeping half the day, you're meditating on women half the day, you're looking at women the other half of the day, you're thinking about, whoa, it's really nice in the Black Sea in the summertime, it's so hot in Vrindavan, I wish I was in the Black Sea. But Krishna, you know, I'm your devotee. You're supposed to take care of me. I'm depending on you. Krishna says, you know, just rot, will you? Because you're a cheater. Your motivation is to exploit Krishna for your own pleasure, and a plea of like an external hypocritical show of I'm some big devotee or some renounced devotee. Well, Krishna will take care of me. And I've seen many people come to Vrindavan like that because I've been here for 20 years. And Krishna ignores them completely. But when somebody like Madhavendra Puri comes to Vrindavan and sits on the banks of Govindakund, and he sits under a tree and says, he doesn't even know about day or night. He's just so absorbed. He's just completely absorbed in Krishna. He's not making any contract. He's not saying anything. Krishna, I came to Vrindavan. Now I've given up everything, Krishna. I've come to Vrindavan. Now you have to take care of me. I'm your devotee. He never has that thought. He says, Krishna, I'm in Vrindavan. This is your place of Leela, Govindakund. I want to enter these Leelas and render service to you here on the banks of Govindakund. So please, I'm begging you to please accept me in your service. Just accept me. I want to do service. And he chants throughout the day and night, begging for service. Of course, at his level, pure devotion, he was entering into the eternal pastimes of the Lord and rendering service. So for someone like that, it's a bond of love. Krishna reciprocates according to the love. But Krishna doesn't reciprocate with cheaters and liars and charlatans and hypocrites. And there's lots of them that come from different countries. Well, I just depend on Krishna. It's the same as hippies. They say, oh, God will take care of me. And then the police put them in jail. Because they don't have a passport or they don't have a visa. Well, I'll just stay in India. I don't need a passport or visa. Then they get, you know. I just throw away my passport and Krishna will take care of me. In other words, Krishna, you know, it's kind of like, it's because we have to analyze again, as I said, back to our psychoanalysis, we have to analyze, are my actions being performed to give Krishna pleasure? Are my actions being covered with the tendency for karma and jnana? And for us, karma and jnana doesn't really refer to merging in Brahman, Advaita, you know, what's called Brahma jnana. or tendency for attachment to the activities or actions of Varna Ashram, Varna Dharma. For us, karma again, karma means the coverings of gross sense gratification. And gyan means a tendency just to be lazy, to merge into, as I said the other day, to merge into lazy space. This is the gyan, because gyanis, they want to merge into Krishna's body, but we want to just kick back and not do anything, not actually work hard and serve Krishna. We want to kick back and be lazy in Vrindavan, because it's warm, there's not 10 feet of snow on the ground like Siberia. Say, look, I was in Siberia, forget it, I can't depend on Krishna here. Why don't you just roll around in the snow in Siberia and depend on Krishna? Why do you have to come to Vrindavan to depend on Krishna? Right? Because he's also in Siberia. You see? So this cheating mentality is, you know. I don't know if that addresses it, but that's all the time we have. It's sincerity of heart and purpose, and as they say in English, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool Krishna any time. They don't say that, but that's a modification. Yeah.
So does it mean that
he thinks I'm picking on him? I want him to go to Russia and roll in the snowbank and depend on Krishna. Good.
So if the devotee is praying Krishna, well, he chants holy name and his motivation, Krishna, protect me from every difficulties I have. So then it's kind of selfish. And then if he's asking him, protect me so I can serve you better.
The thing is, it's automatic. It's like the same thing. The devotee's praying, oh Krishna, oh, please protect me so I can serve you better, or this or that. It's just like if a man, the analogy we were using before, if someone is a sold out servant of a master in the house, he doesn't say, oh, you know, master, by the way, you know, I'm doing all this service, but don't forget, I need some clothes. And I'm doing all this service, don't forget to feed me. It's obvious. You know, I'm saying you don't have to make a separate petition to your master. You just be worried about doing the service. And he's going to notice. Because if you're so absorbed in pleasing him and serving him, he is a human being. And he has some powers of observation, has some sensitivity of heart. He'll say, oh, he's been working so hard, he's got a hole in his pair of pants. So, just like, well, I was temple president, so I had devotees in my temple, and some of them were really austere. And so they would just wear their clothes till they're threadbare. They would be so shy to ask to take any money from the temple to buy a new pair of Sankirtan shoes or something. And we go out on Harinam, and I see the guy's toes sticking out the side of his shoes. And I say, you know, there's holes in his shoes. I said, Krishna, what about your shoes? He says, no, they're okay. I said, what do you mean they're okay? Your toe's sticking out. No, but that's only one toe. I have five. Only one toe is sticking out, there's four more still inside. I said, yeah, okay, but, you know, I think we can spare $5 for a new pair of shoes. So, he wasn't thinking about his clothing or his maintenance, because he was just absorbed in the service, or at least we'd like to think that. Or maybe he's avidute. So that we don't have to make any separate prayers. Oh, Krishna, Hare Krishna. Oh, by the way, you know, I'm chanting Hare Krishna for your pleasure and trying to absorb myself in your Namagun Lila. But don't forget, you know, I am chanting, but I need some sweet rice this afternoon at lunch, or I need to be protected, and it's automatic. We don't have to say anything. We don't have to do anything, any prayers. Although these prayers of Sharanagati and protection are there just to kind of deepen our devotion, deepen our mood. These bhajans of the acharyas are to thicken our bhav. To condense our bhav, so that kind of bhav comes into our chanting of Nam Bhajan. That mood of calling out, and I'm helpless, and please, you know, just help me be your devotee, not protect me. It's just because if you're doing service, you're already protected. It's already, everything's guaranteed, everything's covered. As I mentioned, that the bhakta, the devotee, he doesn't pray. Like someone, many bhaktas or Vaishnavas, especially in South India, they do bhakti, Vishnu bhakti. With an aspiration. They want Salokya Mukti. They want to go to the planet of Vishnu. And they get it. They go there. And they're there. Okay, I've got liberation. They attain prema. They're doing bhakti. They're doing devotion, because you can't get to Vaikuntha unless you do bhakti. They're doing Vishnu bhakti. But their primary objective in their mind while they're doing bhakti is that they want mukti. This is bona fide. You can aspire for four kinds of mukti as a Vaishnava. So they're doing the limbs of bhakti. But bhakti is not their primary motivation. Liberation is their primary motivation. You follow? So they're doing bhakti, okay, they're chanting, they're shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu, smaranam, all the things they're doing, puja, archana, but I want to live on the same planet as Vishnu. I want Saloki Mukti, I want. And to get that, I have to do Vishnu Bhakti. So I'm doing Vishnu Bhakti. So then they go to Vishnu Loka. And every once in a year on Janmashtami or Vishnuastami or whatever they call it, you know, once they go to the temple and they see Vishnu. But the rest of the time they're just watching TV or you know, maybe watching Mahabharata or whatever the spiritual TV up there. They're just living there. Now, we, as Gaudi Vaishnavas, we don't want anything. Janmi Janmishwari, we don't want anything. We simply want the service of the Lord. So all these four kinds of Vaishnava liberations, which are separate entities of themselves, someone may aspire for Salokya. So that's like they get Salokya. But they're nowhere near the Lord, because they don't have any, I just want to live in the spiritual world. I want to go back to God and just live in the spiritual world, get out of this world. So you go there, and you get to your little place, and you live there. They don't really care about being near the Lord or serving the Lord. They just want mukti, but spiritual mukti and Krishna's planet, or Vishnu's planet. So they get Salokya. Then Samipya means that they want to be near the Lord. But if you just simply want to be a prema, we want prema. We want the prem seva of Radha and Krishna. This is all we want. So whether we're in this world or that world, it doesn't matter. But if you only aspire for the prem seva of Radha and Krishna, then what does that mean? First of all, that means you have to be wherever they are. Right? If you want the prem seva of Radharani, you have to be where she is. So that means you have to be in the same place. So by aspiring and endeavoring for the prem seva, Krishna prema pumarta mahan, automatically we get Salokya. We live on the same planet as Radha and Krishna. And then because you want to serve Radha and Krishna, then you get Samipya, which means to be in association, direct association with the Lord. So we get Samipya. And if you want to serve Radha and Krishna, because they're persons, you have to have some personal form. So then you get Sarupya. Or Siddhadeya. So you get Sarupya. And then because you're serving them intimately and they're sharing their bhavas and their premas, that's their wealth. The wealth of Radharani is their Mahabhav. That's what she's made of. Mahabhav Sarupini. So if you're serving the lotus feet of Radharani, she shares that wealth with her Sakhi Manjaris. So then you get Sharsti. Sharsti means to have the same opulence as the Lord. The opulence is love. Love is the greatest wealth. Which Ramananda Roy tells Lord Chaitanya in the 8th chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita Mandi Lila. Who is the wealthiest person? He was Krishna Prem. So the Parishads and the liberated, perfected beings who are serving Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world, they have all these muktis and at one. Like if you have $1,000, then you already have $20 and $10. You see how it's so perfect? So that's why we reject, we don't care anything about it. It's already included. We simply want seva, the service of Radha and Krishna. You understand what I'm saying? You get it's all in one. But the other Vaishnavas in South India and all around the place, I want to be like Jayan Vijay, I want to be an associate. I want Samipya, to be an association of the Lord. That doesn't mean you may be an association, you may be standing there as a doorman. That's what Jayan Vijay, they have Samipya, they're nearby, at least they get to see Vishnu practically every day, or at least unless he doesn't come out of his palace, stays inside for a few weeks. Like Jagannath doesn't come out, he stays inside, you know, with the Lakshmi. He doesn't even come out of his private quarters with Lakshmi for 2 weeks. So Jayan Vijay, they have Samipya, but people that have Salokya or Sharsti, they're living on the same planet. They see Vishnu once a year, once every few years. They don't even see him. But if you have the Prem Seva of Radharani, you see her Astakali Lila, you're with her day and night. So what a supreme fortune is being awarded by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That which has never been given before. You get all liberations in one. And we reject it all. We don't want it. I don't want to go anywhere. If Radha and Krishna are right here and I have their service, I'm happy here. I don't want to go anywhere. I don't back the Godhead. Salokya. I like UP Lokya. Of course, it's not UP. This is a spiritual world, but sometimes people think that it's situated in UP. This is fine. It's really fine. No problem. I had the prem seva Radha and Krishna. I'm blissful. I'm happy. I don't want anything more. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing more required. You have to do this, and you have to get this. The param gati. The param gati. This is it. We're here. It's like someone's floating around in the ocean, and someone meets them in the oceans. What are you doing? So I'm trying to get wet. Acha? Yeah, you're trying to get wet. Well, you're surrounded by it. You're in the water. You're surrounded by it. Really? Yeah, this is ocean. This is Atlantic Ocean. Don't you really? Oh, really? Oh, okay. I don't have to try anymore because I'm already wet. I'm in the middle of it all. So this is Vrindavan, Vrindavan. Oh, why are you living in Vrindavan? Oh, I've been here for 20 years. You know, I'm born in Iran. And I'm here for 25 years. I'm trying to go back to Godhead. Oh, really? I thought Vrindavan was a spiritual world. You're already here. What's your name? Oh, my name is Radhika Dasi. Your name is Radhika Dasi? And you're in Vrindavan? Then what more? You serve Radha and Krishna, you're there. You're here. There's nowhere to go. Right? You're all wet. You're covered with spiritual energy. There's no more karma. No, karma is only there if you think it's there. It's not there. You only think you have karma when you go to an astrologer. If you don't go to an astrologer, then you actually realize, I don't have any karma. I'm only doing bhakti. Day and night, what am I doing is bhakti. My wife is for Krishna. My job is for Krishna. My house is for Krishna. My clothes are for, everything's for Krishna. It's all bhakti. If you connect it, it's all for Krishna. It's all a matter of connection. You may have so many appliances in your house, a refrigerator, electric, you know, whatever, you know, air conditioners, heaters, blenders, and washing machines, but nothing's plugged in. Then there's just a bunch of useless appliances. If you plug them into the supply, then they're all buzzing and doing their work. So as soon as everything we're doing is connected with Krishna and through our consciousness, through our application of consciousness, then it becomes transformed.